to episode number 5 of the Iron Maiden podcast. This one's dedicated to the new album, which is called Final Frontier. Now, this album's absolutely amazing, and I'm actually going to review the album today, and we have Sean, who's back on the show, to help me review the album and give me his insight on the album. So, welcome, Sean. Welcome back to the show.
Hey there, this is Bruce Dickinson. how you doing? Great to be back.
Yeah, I know. I'm doing.
I'm Iron Maiden fans. Hello.
The Iron Maiden fans are probably going nuts. They think it's Bruce Dickinson on the show. All right, so let's get started with the interview with the review, actually. So, first song, The Final Frontier. Now, Satellite 15, The Final Frontier. Now, when I heard this song, like I said in the previous episode, that, you know, the sound effects actually accentuated, you know, most of the song, so you couldn't really hear it very clearly. And when I heard this song, for the album version of it, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. It, you know, it actually outdid itself in every possible way. Adrian's solo literally blew my mind. And the best part about the song is the intro. It's something that Iron Maiden have actually really never done. So, you know, the whole intro, which was actually pre-recorded by Adrian, and he brought it, to the studio, and he showed it to Steve Harris. And Steve actually liked it so much that he decided to, you know, just put the recorded part on there. Adrian was hoping that they'd re-record it, but I think Steve was actually really impressed with it, so he decided to put it on, you know, the way it was bought. So, you know, again, I think the first song, it's a great way to open the album. So I think this is like the first time, one of those rare instances where Maiden opens their album with like an 8 or 9 minute song. But then again, I think this song absolutely did justice. You know, it's one of those cool Maiden songs with a really progressive vibe about it. You know, the catchy riff, and it has everything that a good Maiden song should. What did you think of it?
I think it's a pretty strong song to open up the CD with. I too was am very impressed with how they start. It's definitely Maiden, of course, but with some nice updated touches in that intro. As a matter of fact, we're going to use an abridged version that probably start the next round of gigs. The only reason we're doing an abridged version is because the intro on the album is about 4.5 minutes, and usually when you do a gig, you want to do about a 2 minute or so intro and then stop, but it's terrific. The song itself, my first exposure to it, probably like everyone else, was with the video. And I can tell it was a catchy tune, but again, with all the sound effects and whatnot, it was a little tougher to really get a gist of the song. So when I heard it in its full glory on the CD, I got the Mission Edition, of course, and definitely a nice way to come out of the gates. I think the production, again, on the CD as a whole is very strong, and I like how Kevin recorded Bruce's voice. And I like it. I mean, I'm sure we're going to talk about other songs and, you know, the impact, but definitely a good song. Maybe one of their, for me, perhaps their strongest opening song since Brave New World, I think, me personally.
Yeah, I actually quite agree with you on that. I mean, Wildest Dreams and, Different World are, I mean, they're really great singles, but I think The Wicker Man was like the strongest song. And, you know, since then, I think The Final Frontier has actually, you know, done justice to a song like The Wicker Man, because I think this is a phenomenal way to open the album. I mean, it's just that song, there's just something about it. It literally, you know, sticks in your mind, and it's for all the right reasons. So I think that, you know, that's a fantastic way to open the album. You know, and moving on, we have to the second track, which is El Dorado, the single that Maiden released on June 8th before they started the Final Frontier World Tour. I think everyone's heard this by now. Like I said again, you know, it's, for me, it would, along with The Alchemist, I think that would probably be one of, you know, my least favorite songs on the album. I mean, it's a really great song, but, you know, when you listen to the other songs in the album, they have, you know, they just have so much of soul. And, you know, they have something in them. And I don't think El Dorado really, you know, has that in it. The song basically is, it has this really cynical vibe about it, where it's basically based on, you know, the recession and, you know, how the market's just pulling you in. So I think it's something really different, a different topic that Maiden picked up there. I think, again, the riffs are really good. The solos are good. I'm not saying it's a bad song, but, you know, compared to the other stuff on the album, I think, you know, this wouldn't be as good as, the, you know, the other stuff the album has to offer. What's your take on it?
Well, I think it's as good as the rest of the album. It's definitely different. For me, it's perhaps the first two songs are the straight ahead rockers, if you will, that and probably The Alchemist. I like it even more now than when I first heard it. Again, hearing it and it's all in its full sound on the CD, you can really appreciate the power of the song. As a matter of fact, I'm getting a lot of great feedback here in the States from the fans and even within the band. I mean, the guitar players that I know in our band and other guitar players, it's like having a nice big cut of beef, you know, for these mm-hmm. carnivores I know that just want to sink their teeth into some big time riffs. So the song is definitely a riff song. And for at least some people I know, that's their favorite part of Maiden from years past and whatnot, is just having that riff driven music. I think it's a terrific throwback as far as how it begins and ends. And I think it's very catchy. Style wise, again, very different from some of the other songs in the album. For me, I talked about this in the last episode. I just had to get a little used to how Bruce approached some of the verses on the songs. But again, like, the guy's a legend and a master. And at this point, I really enjoy what he's done with that song, especially mm-hmm. when he hits the bridge in the chorus. I mean, he just knows when to really, you know, excuse the term, air it out, Mr. Aerate Siren. I like the song quite a bit. As a matter of fact, we try to approach songs kind of democratically with what we're going to learn off new albums and whatnot. So far, I've been kind of asking for feedback from some of the bandmates, who I hope to have a couple on today, if that's okay, later on. That seems to be one of the songs that they're all liking a lot. It just seems to be a really good live song because it's got a lot of power and very catchy.
Yeah, actually, you know, that's feedback I actually got from a lot of fans. A friend of mine, Pete Braun, who recently saw Maiden on the Final Frontier World Tour at Detroit, he told me that El Dorado had this, vibe about it live, which it didn't have on the studio. So I think maybe, you know, live El Dorado would sound better than it does on the album. But then again, I think that's the case with all Maiden songs. You know, they have that vibe about them live, which you really can't capture on the album, even though they've tried to approach, you know, the recording in that manner. But I still think, you know, Maiden live is just something completely different. So, you know, whatever, they still have the magic. And they still have the passion, and I think that's what's required when you play. So, anyway, moving on to Mother of Mercy, the third song on the album, written by Adrian Smith and Steve Harris. Now, again, to be totally honest, I think this is like one of the best songs I've heard in a really, really long time. Like I said before, I just enjoy everything that Maiden writes about war. Something that's themed around war, religion. You know, Maiden just literally they outdo themselves every time when, you know, they write about something like that. So I think Mother of Mercy in itself is a really strong song. You know, the lyrics for it, absolutely, out of this world, really brilliant. It's got some really strong riffs. It's something that, it's a kind of song that, you know, It just hangs around you. It has this really gloomy effect. So I think this is, again, one of, you know, the best songs on the album. What do you think?
I find it to be very unique. I just got a call coming in. Could I just interrupt for just a second? Our bass player, Francesco Bolero, has actually just chimed in. Do you mind if he just says hi to you and everyone and chips in his opinion?
Hell yeah, why not?
Frank, can you hear us?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's good, man. What's up with you?
Nothing. Just hard at working. Heard you guys are doing a little interview, and I'm just diving, so hello.
Hey, that's awesome.
Yep, Steve Harris here on the line. Steve Harris.
You know, my Steve Harris is my favorite band member, so I'm actually talking to my favorite band member at the moment. So, okay.
Francisco, I know you don't have time to stay on a long time. What's your favorite two songs off the new one? We're talking about the new CD today.
I have to go with Science 15. I actually really like Coming Home.
Yes. We haven't gotten to, we're going song by song, but we're coming up on that soon.
Indeed, I think Coming Home. I think that's just a favorite. I think everyone who's actually got the album has really enjoyed that song in particular.
Lovely. Well, Francesco's been with us. Actually, we're sneaking up on a year, I think, since we started jamming together. And, you know, he gets in character like Mr. Harris. He's a top-flight bass player. And above all, Francesco's a huge Iron Maiden fan. Would you mind just sharing us a little bit of your background with being an Iron Maiden fan?
Basically, been listening to Maiden since 1982 or so. I got the chance to see him on the World Peace Tour, and I've been hooked ever since. Peace of Mind was my favorite album. You know, up until now. This new album's really good. The more I listen to it, the more it grows on me. So,
Like a fungus.
Yes.
I think that's what Iron Maiden is. They're like a virus. Everything they do basically just, you know, it infects you and it just sticks. It sticks on, and they're like probably the best virus in the world.
Yes, I usually get a penicillin shot when that's the case. You want to hang out, Francesco, or do you have to go? We know you're, amongst other things, a very busy individual. He's an entrepreneur here in the States. He's a successful business person as well as an incredible bass player.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Maybe I'll call you sometime. I need some info on stocks and stuff on the international market. So perhaps I'll call you sometime then, Francesco.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just out here on the road, so I have a few minutes to work. Keep doing that.
Okay, well, we'll continue talking and then jump in on it as much as you'd like. All right, so we're talking about Mother of Mercy now.
What's your take on the song, basically?
For me, Mother of Mercy, it's got a very dark sense to it. I was listening a little more carefully again when the CD came out. This almost like a detune type of thing going on the guitar, which I think is pretty cool. And it's more, I would call this a song only for a Maiden fan. It's not the kind of song that you're going to probably get a new fan to listen to the band, but somebody that's familiar with the stew and the ingredients of what makes up Iron Maiden, I would consider this more of a deeper track. That's my take on it. I enjoy the song. It didn't grab me overall like some of the others did right away, but it's one of those songs for me that if, like, Francesco's on the road, if I'm out on the road for work myself and I got time to listen to it straight through, it's one of those you can really kind of sink yourself into and go away with the song. That's what I enjoy about that tune.
Francesco, what's your take on the song?
I'm not sure what to say about it. I do really like the tune. I guess I'm kind of in the same boat with John, whereas I don't think it's the best tune on the album, but definitely Iron Maiden.
Alright, I think moving on, going to Coming Home, basically. Again, another terrific song on the album. I think this is, it's like a universally recognized song from the Final Frontier. I think it definitely has a lot of influence. You can literally hear it on the verses and stuff. So I think, again, this is probably the best song on the album, along with Starblind, Talisman, and the Isle of Avalon, and When the Wild Wind Blows. I think these are the stronger songs on the album that just absolutely stand out and put Final Frontier where it actually, you know, deserves to be, global chart domination, that is. So again, Coming Home, a fantastic song. It has a lot of soul into it, and it really gets you going. What's your take on the song, Sean?
I definitely, when I listened to the CD, immediately this song grabbed me. And for me personally, it is, to me, one of the best Iron Maiden songs I've ever heard. And I find it to be the perfect blend of kind of their old school influence, their new school influence. New school meaning their progressive elements. And for me, it actually reminded me quite a bit of a Bruce Dickinson solo type of effort, which is a good thing to me because I love what he's done for his solo stuff. I'm lobbying with the bandmates to play this one live, and it seems like everyone likes it, so who knows, maybe we'll do it. If I had to pick one song from the new album that we're gonna play, even above Final Frontier and a couple of others, this would be my first pick just because I love it so much. I played it when it came out. I played it to a room full of people over a PA, and they immediately thought it was amazing. And everyone I've, you know, because like we all do, hey, check this out. Everyone's really enjoying it. I just love the feel of it. I love the verse. I love the buildup. I love the chorus. The lyrics are outstanding also. If I have it correct, Bruce, Adrian, and Steve collaborated on this song together.
Exactly. And Bruce, Adrian, and Steve have written this together.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Adrian on the album. You can hear that, and I love Adrian's writing. Steve wrote everything too, of course, but to hear that Adrian / Bruce influence marry with that, those are historically been some of the most enjoyable Iron Maiden songs to me, like 2 Minutes to Midnight. You know, you can always tell when Adrian's got his influence
uh-huh,
in there.
Uh-huh. It's that thing that just sticks, you know? You know it's Adrian when you hear that.
Yeah, and the solos, in general, the solos on the album are amazing. On this song, very bluesy, love it. Dave Orndorff, who's in our band, who I'm going to try to get on the phone too at some point. Maybe Frank can conference in Dave and Steve. We'll do a little chain gang of speakerphone. He likes the solos a lot also. Again, easily my favorite on the whole CD. Probably, arguably, tied for Out of the Silent Planet for my favorite song in the last 20 years from Iron Maiden.
Oh, wow. That's quite a statement. I mean, you definitely have a connection with this song. I do agree with you in some aspects, actually, because, you know, when you hear the Final Frontier, this song actually was the first one that stood out for me. And I instantly knew that, you know, Maiden have done something really incredible with this new album. And Coming Home is definitely, I think, you know, one of the strongest songs they've written this decade. So, again, a brilliant song. Moving on, we have The Alchemist. Now, for a song, I think...
Before we hit that, Frank, do you want to say anything about the song?
I really enjoy the new progressive element that Iron Maiden's adding into the music, and especially in this song. And I didn't really like it at first. Well, when I first heard the album, The Alchemist was the song that grabbed me right off, but, you know, upon more listens, Not Coming Home is like my favorite song on the album.
Uh-huh.
Frank likes to slow dance with his wife to this one.
Alright, we were talking about The Alchemist, so, like I said again, it's a good song, but definitely not the song that, you know, did it for me, that made Final Frontier one of my favorite albums. It wasn't because of The Alchemist. I still think The Alchemist is a really good song. It has a lot of classic Maiden material that's, you know, into it with some of the newer stuff, like you said earlier. It's a good song. The solo is, I think, the best part of the song for me. Yannicka's, again, with a terrific solo. So I think for me, this would probably be the weakest song on the album, but nonetheless still a really good song. What do you have to say?
I don't feel like any song is weak on the album, but relatively speaking, for me, I think it's just a great song, but again, like anyone else, you're going to have your favorites. and this would not be one of the favorites I have, but I think it's a, again, it's one of those songs where when you're listening to the whole CD, I think they did a very good job on how they sequenced the flow of the songs. So coming straight off of Coming Home, which is, again, is a slow to mid-tempo song, to this, I think is great. I think it's actually well-placed in the album. So again, it's one of those songs where I wouldn't just throw it on its own and crank it. But when I'm listening to the CD as a whole, I really do enjoy it. If that makes any sense. Again, there's a couple of songs I can just throw on, like Coming Home, for example. I'll just, hey, I only got 3 minutes. Let me throw that in, you know, that kind of thing. This wouldn't be one of those, but again, I think it's, I think it's a good example of how Bruce can take any riff and make it interesting with his vocals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I think, like I said, it's not a bad song, but just for me, I think I probably don't like it as much. Probably if I listen to it more and more, eventually, you know, I'd start liking it. It happens many times, but I think as of now, I'm really not, you know, really into the song. I still think it's good, but, and then, you know, jumping off, The Alchemist, we move straight into The Isle of Avalon. And I mean, this song is, I think, one of the best songs on the album. And the best songs that Maiden have, you know, probably done this decade. It's one of, it's like right up there with, you know, some of the classic stuff that they've done, like Time of the Ancient Mariner and Power Slave and Seven Son of a Seven Son. The lyrics, absolutely outstanding. The riffs, the solos. You know, just everything about the song. Bruce, again, I mean, he's just vocally outdone himself. I mean,
that's fair. It's a very close number two for me to Coming Home.
Uh-huh.
And I, not to jump in, I just, you get me so excited with what you were saying. You know, what I think it has in common, those two songs, is that there's a sense of tension that builds up in each song. You kind of know what's coming next, and you want it to be that next thing, you know, where Bruce kind of really airs it out. This song, the way they start it, I think, is grabbed in a way. The build-up is terrific. It reminded me a little bit of Seven Son, you know, the song Seven Son.
Seven Son.
To that musical part, you know, during the song, a little bit, I think it's a better version of that, quite frankly, but... Mm-hmm. This is one of those songs where if I have that extra few minutes, I can throw this on and rock out to it. And I agree with you; it's one of their best songs ever.
Exactly. It has like one of these you know, bass sessions in it that we see on, you know, songs like Sign of the Cross, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, or Seven Son of a Seven Son. These small bass you know, parts. But it's the first time Maiden have actually, you know, started a song off like this. It's really cool because it's sort of it's actually like a tale that's being told to you, and it's, I think, the way Maiden arrange their songs and the way they write it. I mean, the Isle of Avalon just, you know, shows the world the way the musical genius that Maiden, you know, are. I mean, it's just simply outstanding. Really, when I listen to this song, I'm in a completely different place. I'm not thinking about anything else, but, you know, I actually visualize everything. You know, it's really, really great.
You just you hit the nail right on the head there. This song is a great reminder for me of how Iron Maiden can take me somewhere that no other band does. With that perfect for me, being a singer, I'm very sensitive to how a voice sounds and what's going on vocally in a song.
Uh-huh.
Bruce, of course, has always been my favorite singer for all the different things he does. This is a great reminder of that when Maiden has those crystallizing moments in a song, it just elevates your experience somewhere else. If I was on a desert, if I was on a stranded on a remote island out in the ocean, and I was given, I don't know, maybe 20 songs overall to be able to listen to, of course, of just Iron Maiden, I mean, this would probably sneak right in there because, I just like the way it kind of keeps building. When it finally kicks into that almost old school type of chorus, it's perfect for me. it's just one of those moments where you go, yeah. And it's funny, I've played it for a lot of people, and when it finally gets to that point where it kicks into that up-tempo, you see everyone's head start bobbing. We're all cows. You know, we're all just kind of like sitting there, like sheep, you know, just kind of like moving our heads together. It's one of those wonderful reasons why we listen to music in the first place.
Exactly. It's like, you know, Maiden always have this magic with their riffs, and, you know, they sort of bring it in to their pre-choruses and the choruses themselves. I mean, you'd listen to a Maiden chorus, and irrespective of whether you're a Maiden fan or no, the song will always just, it just keeps playing in your head. I mean, that's the magic that Maiden have. And I honestly, this album is really, it's something that I never thought it would be, because the whole concept of, you know, space travel and stuff like that, like being based on space, basically, it was a little, it didn't really go down well with me. I mean, I was looking forward to it, but then again, it's like one of those odd topics, but what Maiden have actually come out with is just absolutely phenomenal. So I'm extremely happy with this album, and I think Maiden haven't disappointed me in any way, you know, since Fear of the Dark. So I'm really happy. What about you? What's your take on Starblind?
Starblind, again, I think is another one of those Bruce Adrian Steve compilations. And what I find is that this is kind of like halfway in between being a quote-unquote deep cut for me, where you got to be listening to the whole album to get into it, but it's also very catchy, so I can throw it on. For me, I would say that as far as, I guess the chorus is very memorable. I would call this a very serious song, meaning
It's like you could sense the dark vibes from it, you know, just from the chorus, the part, you know, the little guitar figures that Yannick's pulling in, you know, during the chorus and stuff. So it sort of takes you into a darker place.
Well, yeah, what I'm finding is it's one of those songs where you can tell that Iron Maiden put a lot of effort into what they're trying to do in that song. Uh-huh. It's not, for me, it's not one of those songs that is like a coming home that grabs you right away, but it's also something you can tell there's a lot going on in the song. There's just no sense of any filler on the album at all. Even a song like this, which hasn't gotten that much attention or feedback from the people I've talked to, it's a very strong song. I think the guitar players are more prone to be into the, it's a very good guitar song. You were talking about Yannick, for example, and whatnot. I like, you know what, the part where it kind of quiets down and then it kicks back in again. Where it kind of comes back into the heavy chorus. That seems to be the best moment in the song, it seems.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that part, because the way the transition, that I think that's the most phenomenal part of the song again, and the lyrics, something to look on. I mean, the songwriting for this album has definitely been, I think, extraordinary. It's something that, you know, that Maiden have always been good at, but I think on this album they've done something completely different. I mean, they've taken the theme. I like what they've done with the theme. They've literally improvised and just made it their own. So I definitely think lyrically also this album definitely just stands out from, you know, the other stuff that made it.
Definitely. Strong stuff.
The song right after that, The Talisman. I actually literally don't have words to again say what this song is. I think for that matter, all the songs after Alchemist are definitely, you know, songs that just, that, you know, that are, they are songs that they're basically epic that you wouldn't expect on one album. You know, normally bands like, you know, the bands that have been around for, let's say 15, 20 years have these songs maybe on every two or three albums, but I think, you know, put five songs like these down on one album is something really cool. So again, The Talisman, as I was saying, another phenomenal song. It's like another great story, something that you can actually visualize, something that takes you into a different place. Very strong lyrics.
Kind of like a blood brother to Rhyme and the Ancient Mariner, you know?
Yeah, precisely. Exactly. It's really cool. And the one part, the riff, where he goes, "No, there's no one going back." I mean, I don't really sing that well.
Is that Bruce Dickinson I just heard?
Yeah, but I think that part, phenomenal. That riff just like sticks in your mind. I really don't know how Maiden come up with stuff like this, but...
That's my favorite vocal part of the song, actually, you're doing.
Uh-huh, exactly. That was like the best part of the song. And that, and I love the intro also with the acoustics and stuff. So again, The Talisman, they're definitely, you know, one of the really strong songs on the album. After which we have... The man who.
If I could just chime in on The Talisman. This is another example of a song that harkens for me to having a similar vibe to Bruce Dickinson's solo material. And in particular, with like that, when you're. You were doing the chorus, actually. That for me is the highlight where he just, again, you kind of. Anyone that's ever tried to write music, and I've tried, by the way, with I was in an original band called Severe, and we wrote songs. Uh-huh. If you ever try to write material, it really sobers you up in a hurry to understand just how amazing these guys are to be able to write so much stuff over the last 30 years that is catchy and strong and relevant. Mm-hmm. That when Bruce starts singing on that part, you just can't imagine a better choice of how to approach that singing wise. It's just like, wow, that's just really awesome.
Absolutely. And, agree with you.
It almost reminds me a little bit of, I'm trying to think, it could be maybe the cousin of Dark Side of Aquarius from his Accident of Birth album.
Well, definitely. I actually Bruce's solo stuff a lot. It was very strong, and especially the albums that he had Adrian on. So that too was, some again strong songwriting. It has, you know, the best part about Bruce's solo albums are they have this really cool rock and roll vibe. So I think, which you don't get to hear too much when he was in Maiden, but nonetheless. Anyway, moving on. Like I said, we were on The Man Who Would Be King. I think this is the only song. In which Dave Murray actually has songwriting credits on the album. Again, a very unique song. You know, like I said, the last five songs of the album, they paint pictures. You can actually visualize what's happening when you listen to the song. Very strong riffs. So I think, again, The Man Who Would Be King, definitely one of the strong songs on the album, something that I really enjoy listening to. And again, this song has got a lot of soul in it. So I think... On the whole, it's a really cool song. I like the way it goes about, and you know, Bruce again vocally, like I said, just fantastic. In the last few songs, you know, some of the notes that he hits, very very cool. So
yeah, the Man Who Would Be King to me is like an Oreo cookie. It's a very good song wrapped around an unbelievably moving, strong instrumental section. You know what I'm talking about? I can't remember if it's around the 6-minute mark or whatever of the song where it just kicks into the band playing. It's like you almost wish you had another song right there because the riff, you know, it goes, the whole part. Uh-huh. I'm just like, as soon as it went into that, I'm like, wow, this is... You just want to kind of like close your eyes. You can't do that when you're driving too much, but... Well, just kind of close your eyes and float in the air. Again, it's a good song. That instrumental section is just, you know what I'm talking about, right there in the middle.
Exactly, yeah. It's brilliant, right? It's something that just catches you.
I was kind of like talking out of two sides of my mouth. One half is like, wow, this is cool. And the other half is like, damn, they should have made a song just off this riff. It's so cool. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Every time I reach that part of the song, I always skip back and listen to it over and over again. That part of the song is so cool. Like you said, exactly. They could have just written another. They could have written an entire song with that.
Yes, sir.
Moving on to the last song on the album, and I think the most awesome way to close the album, better than the Legacy, which is When the Wind Blows, When the Wild Wind Blows. Sorry, what a song! I literally have no words. That the intro riff in itself. You know, the part where he goes, have you heard what they said on the news today? I mean, that song left me speechless. Especially the outro to the song, where, you know, the last part where he actually sings about the outcome of the event, and he's like, they had their arms wrapped around each other. I mean, I just get chills when I listen to that part. What a song. It's I think, one of the best songs I've made ever. Definitely in my top 10 at least, if not top 5, but
it's a strong song. I gotta defend the Legacy though. Off the last album, I think that song is phenomenal. I especially when it kicks into the, not to get off subject, but when the Legacy kicks into the second half of the song, that was almost like worth the price of admission for the whole album for me when I heard that.
I absolutely agree with you. There's no doubt that the Legacy is like one of the most amazing songs the Mids ever did.
Here's a funny story. In Boston, Massachusetts, in the United States, in Maiden went to play that, and the hilarious. I was actually fortunate enough to talk to Bruce Dickinson about it. As a matter of fact, the video on my Facebook page is me and Bruce talking about the Legacy. Yannick's acoustic guitar was way out of tune. Anyone that has a bootleg would be able to hear this. It was like incredibly sharp, and I was just cracking up about it. The song was still ruled, but you should hear it. It's eye-watering funny. When the Wind Blows, for me, maybe one of the best uses. I say for me a lot. Can we just delete those out of this? Let me just say, instead of for me, we'll say the use of the intro on that has a wonderful, peaceful type of feel to it. It might be one. There's been a lot of intros and outros in Maiden songs for quite a long time. That's been, I find that to be perhaps one of the most effective intros being relevant to the song. Uh-huh. In other words, there's a bunch of songs that have nice intros, but if you delete the intro and outro off, you kind of, you know, you still get into the song. I think this particular song, this intro is essential. It just really comes, and then it does, and it goes back to it at the end of the song. I love that about it. I like the it just has a different feel to it that I'm not accustomed to hearing from Maiden on some of the songs.
Exactly.
But it seems to wrap up this particular CD perfectly. It fits in really well with the other songs on this CD. Mm-hmm. The whole CD stylistically has a nice tone to it that is a little new. And I've been trying to think about what it is, and I think what's happened is the guitars have come more front and center at the beginning of the songs throughout the album. Uh-huh. The only difference is just some of the textures where, like on El Dorado, they're coming out the crashing, you know, the full gain. And
exactly.
But even on, for instance, we'll use Isle Avalon, that has an intro, but that intro right away is guitar with drums and bass involved. Whereas you're hearing a lot of a very bass driven intros from Mr. Uh-huh. Harris. His bass is still in the intros, but you're hearing on equal footing or even more guitar. And mm-hmm. I think for some fans, that's been better received from them than just a lot of the bass-driven intros they've heard.
Uh-huh.
I mean, really going back now, if you think about it, probably to the X Factor has been that pattern was established, it seemed. I've been fine with them myself, but that's the biggest thing I'm noticing is you're hearing a lot more guitar beginning to end in all these songs. Does that make sense to you too?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to point that out. It's actually something very, it's very cool that you pointed it out. I was just thinking about this the other day. the newer Maiden songs, actually, I wouldn't just say for the Final Frontier. If you look at, you know, songs from the other albums as well, there are a lot of, you know, guitar parts in for the intro and the outro, even on A Matter of Life and Death. A lot of the songs, for example, for the Greater Good of God again. So, it's a really cool thing that you actually brought this up and you pointed it out. Again, back to When the Wild Wind Blows. Like I said, for me, I think this is probably the best song on the album for me, along with Coming Home. And I guess, like I said, the others, Isle of Avalon, Starblind, and The Talisman. I think these are all are fantastic songs. On the whole, I think the album's fantastic. It's definitely done wonders for everyone. I've heard a few people complain about it, especially in the Maiden fan club. You know, there are a few people who said that, you know, the song didn't really go down well with them, and, you know, they played it 4 or 5 times, but the album didn't have what the other albums had. But I honestly think that this is one of the best albums that Maiden have put out. You know, for me, I mean, maybe it's a little early to say it, but I honestly love this album. I think I like it more than Brave New World, probably. It's definitely doing wonders for me. And well, also...
by the way, I'm happy to say we have Francesco back with us. And an observation, and again, maybe paying attention a little more to what's going on with fans is just the nature of the beast, because I happen to be in the tribute band. Uh-huh. But it seems like there's kind of two general categories of Iron Maiden fans that I encounter. One category being the fans that pretty much just into their 80s heyday up through like Seventh Son. They all tend to be somewhere between 35 and 55 years old. And, you know, back then those albums were coming out new, so we all were emotionally attached. We all loved that. I don't know of anyone that doesn't love that material. Some of those fans are very stubborn to accept anything beyond that from Maiden. They changed their style in 1990. That for many people wasn't well received. When Blaze came along, again, some of them by then had jumped off the bandwagon completely and dismissed the band. And then with the Bruce Adrian reunion with the 6-piece, a lot of those fans haven't even listened to the albums, or if they did, they didn't take the time to really soak them in. They just kind of said, that doesn't sound like Way Eagles Dare, so I'm not going to listen to that. So I'm seeing that there's that, and then there's a lot of fans that have just kind of stayed up with the band and do like the newer material. Maybe not necessarily the same way they might have liked the stuff until 88, but they've enjoyed it. I fall in the category of liking – for me, a way to sum it up for me would be – Love most of the 80s. Love a lot of the stuff from the 2000s. The 90s for me was kind of the down period. There's certain individual tracks that I like a lot. Oh. But here's the thing we're noticing, and we talked about this in the last episode, is that a lot of the fans are starting to come to gigs, especially, and I'm putting the feelers out there, the 18-plus crowd, they're huge fans of the newer stuff because it's new to them. And they're going through that same thing we went through 25 years ago. And what's happening is, like, just this week, for example, I've been kind of checking around to see about the Final Frontier, and most of them already gone out and got it and love it. Uh-huh. Some of them have actually gone out and went hunting for it on vinyl.
Speaking of which, I was actually lucky to get it on vinyl. I got it on vinyl myself, so...
Nice, but that's what I'm seeing. So going back to what you said about fan club and whatnot, people talking about it's not their cup of tea for this and that. I mean, we're all going to have opinions about albums and tracks we like or don't like, but I do find that there's some people that just are resistant to even bothering to listen to some of the new stuff just because they kind of made up their mind that, you know, just up until whatever, Seventh Son, that's it for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I actually agree with
you. That's more of a minority these days than like 5 years ago. That was the case a lot. But as the fans that are the next generation of fans have gotten a little older, and now they're actually starting to surface, I'm finding that like a good 2/3 or more
of the people we're running across that are really current into the stuff are the younger ones that like it all.
Exactly.
And I'm glad because I like all the stuff to some degree, you know?
Absolutely. I think, you know, basically the newer fans need to, you know, sort of get the word out that what Maiden's doing is still good. And, you know, I totally agree with the fact that some of the older fans are still resistant to listen to the newer stuff because, I mean, I don't know what it is, but they're just resistant. It's like you won't even give it a chance. But I honestly think some of the newer stuff that Maiden's doing is phenomenal. It's definitely, you know, it's got its plus points. It may be a little progressive, but nonetheless, I think that's what's doing the job for Maiden. And, you know, if that was the case, if they actually, you know, were just an old band and if they didn't have anything left in them, they wouldn't be around for 30 years. And especially not in 2010 with, you know, their album being number one in 21 countries. So I think, you know, definitely Iron Maiden are still a band that's very new and happening.
Eddie, can you do you want to chime in anything on that?
I can barely hear you guys.
We've been talking about
Francesco, would you like to say a few words on you know, Final Frontier and, you know, Maiden's newer stuff in general? Did you enjoy the album as a Maiden fan?
Francesco, you're being asked if you enjoy the album as a fan.
Enjoy the new album?
Yeah.
Being asked what,
Sean? You're being asked if you enjoy the new album.
Oh, I'm loving the new album now, more and more every time I listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, you know, perfect blend of classic Maiden riffs, Steve Harris, you know, his triplets, and you know, a lot of new elements too, progressive sounding type song, Starblind, for instance. Just an awesome song.
Starblind fan, there you go.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Some of the riffs remind me of progressive bands, almost like Opeth and Porcupine Tree and stuff, and I close my eyes, I can almost, you know, hear some of those type of styles incorporated into the new album.
Those are two amazing bands. Opeth and Porcupine Tree, he was saying, in case you guys can't hear him, actually a couple of my favorite bands in the whole world right there.
Exactly.
And yeah, good point, Frank. The dark tone to the riff, right? Kind of reminds you, yeah. Hey, I have, you know, here's another thing, just to kind of further prove how well this album's being received. The results for it came out on the Billboard chart. That's how they measure record sales in the United States.
Exactly. And number I think four. Number four, number, right?
Number four, which it's the highest ever chart position for an Iron Maiden album in this country ever. And it did very big sales.
Uh-huh.
I know from other bands I like, nobody's going to go out and buy an album, especially these days when you can hear it first.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's a sad commentary, but a lot of people were hearing this album well before it came out. For people to go out in this country and put this album to number four, their highest ever, is a real demonstration of how much they really like this album and the material. And that I'm just like so psyched by that, because you hate to see great art go unnoticed. And in this case, people to go out and spend money on something they could arguably go download a copy from someone, that's just awesome.
I actually agree with you. I think this, in terms of record.
You know, I think this is probably the best material since Seven Sons, it's just my opinion, but you know, the 90s and 2000s really weren't that great of an era for me, for Iron Maiden. But this album really reeled me back in, so just great material.
Exactly, like Frank said, it's probably his favorite album after Seven Sun. It's definitely one of the strongest albums I've heard in a been a really, really long time. And, you know, that just proves, like Sean just said, it went to number four in the United States. It's gone to number one in 21 other countries. And, I mean, this album's just, it has success written all over it. And I still think Maiden have it in them, because if they didn't, the album wouldn't just prove to be, you know, so phenomenal. I think it's actually turning out to be the band's most successful album to date. So I just hope the chart positions keep getting better and better. It's gone to number one in the UK, which is their only album since The Seventh Son, which has gone to number one. So that's really cool.
And isn't it cool that they recorded it at Compass Point?
Yeah, it's the same place where Peace of Mind and Powerslave were recorded. So yeah, that is really cool.
And yeah, definitely. I just for everyone listening, please, if you're an Iron Maiden fan, if you haven't listened to this yet, go out and just buy it. Go out, and the Mission Edition's great because you plug it into your computer and you get a. I did that when I bought it. Amazing pictures, very nice high definition pictures of wallpapers. I haven't done the video game yet because I'm a single dad, and you know, maybe someday when the kids graduate from high school, I'll get around to that. But the video's there too. Do that for two reasons. One, there is a huge difference in sound quality when you hear the actual WAV files in the CD versus an MP3 you might hear somewhere. And secondly, demonstrate that support for Maiden, because at this juncture, they got nothing more to prove. They could call it a day, and I think we need Iron Maiden a hell of a lot more than they need us. And one indicator is let's show them that we're gonna willing to go out and spend a little money on what they worked hard to produce for us. And of course, when they're coming out in their tours all over, be there. And, you know, maybe beat a couple people over the head and turn them into Iron Maiden fans too. And if you happen to be here in the United States, particularly in the northeastern United States, southern Canada, just a reminder, our tribute band's called Run to the Hills. We have here Frank from the band. He's a bass player. I'm the singer, Sean. We would love to have you come on down. We promise to you that we're going to give you a nice blend of the old school and stuff from the 90s and 2000s. We need your support, of course. Just go to our Facebook page or MySpace. Facebook, just like the page and suggest to friends. You can find us pretty easy. I think you just type something like Iron Maiden Run to the Hills, Iron Maiden Tribute Band, something like that. The Iron Maiden podcast, you guys have been wonderfully supportive. We appreciate all that support. And this podcast, keep listening, because this is a dream come true to hear someone so well-studied and well-versed and so interested in Iron Maiden, the fabric of their albums. I got to say, Rowan, you do one terrific job.
Thank you, Sean. I mean, it wouldn't be possible without you guys. I mean, the listeners who definitely, I mean, you know, just to show your support of the listeners have been, El Dorado was, I think, the most listened, you know, podcast on the My Podcast page, I think, when it came out for the first two or three days. It was right up there. So I really want to thank all the fans who've, you know, been so supportive. And, you know, especially you, Sean, you're doing a fantastic job with me on the show. And I, you know, hopefully you'll be back for more episodes. And I think today's episode was great. And I also want to thank Frank for being on the show. And I hope Frank comes back and does more shows with us and, you know, gives us his insight on the band.
Who knows? Maybe we'll bring on two band members next time. We'll keep trying to chip away and sneak them on. And again, we all have one thing in common. We're just huge Iron Maiden fans. And we thank the good Lord that they exist, you know? I mean, we feel like children of the damned, wink wink.
Exactly, children of the damned. I like that. Also, for the Maiden listeners out there, watch out for the next episode, because I think we're doing a review on The Number of the Beast. So the next one's going to be a little special, because that's one of my favorite albums. So watch out for that. That's episode number 6. I'm not sure when that'll be out, but anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode so far. And again, thank you, Sean, and thank you, Frank, for being on the show. It's been awesome chatting with you guys on about the Final Frontier. I guess we're three Maiden fans with one common goal. It's basically to spread Maiden to, you know, the rest of the world, to people who haven't heard it, and Maidenize them. So thanks, Sean, for being on the show. And thank you, Frank, also, for being on the show.
Thanks. We had a great time.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to thank Sean again for coming on the show. just to give you guys a clue of how close Sean actually sounds to Bruce, I'm gonna play a clip. This one's Children of the Dam, which has been performed by the band, by the tribute band that Sean's from, Run to the Hills. This has been performed live by them. So, I mean, just listen to this clip, and I promise it'll knock you out. To sum it up, I'd really like to thank Sean for coming on the show and doing a review with me. Also, The Final Frontier, a really, really great album. So if you're a Maiden fan, and if you just, I'm obviously guessing most of you guys out there have already got the album, but in case you haven't, you can always go out and buy it. It's still available in stores. And if you can't find it in a store near you, please go on to iTunes and you can download it. Also, I want to thank all the listeners again. If you have any feedback about the episode, please leave it on the Iron Maiden podcast.mypodcast.com, or you can send us a mail at theironmaidenpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter to receive regular updates from the Iron Maiden podcast. And I was considering basically doing an episode on the Number of the Beast. So I guess that's going to be episode number 6. Also, Chris sent us a review for The Final Frontier. So if you want to check the review out, please go to the website. That's www.theironmaidenpodcast.mypodcast.com and check under the comment section for the episode El Dorado, which is episode number 4. So you can check the review, and thank you, Chris, for giving me the link. And... of the irons.